Hi, I'm Larry Stevens, co-founder of Opus Workspace, and you're listening to the Kick-Ass Life Show with David Wood.
Want to make your life better? This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hey, it's David here, and welcome to the Kick-Ass Life Show. And there may be a little bit of an echo in my office because I have no furniture. I know, I'm a twit, whatever. But here I am, finally here. I'm looking out across this magnificent view. It's taken a while. Back in the house. Have no furniture up here yet, but we're moving in today. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to record the first show from the new headquarters of the Kick-Ass Life Show. And I hope you'll get here. Come visit. It's stunning. It is stunning. Great guest on today. But you know, I'm feeling very, very, what am I feeling? I'm feeling a little bit like music. And it's interesting, this guy, I look at a lot of famous people and people with who have influence, and sometimes, you know, it gets to them, right? And they start to think that they're above other people. But this guy doesn't. He's amazing. You know, he's just here in Kelowna. Kelowna is this great city where we live, 150,000 people, stunning. And, you know, we have all the big bands come through. Elton John's been here, Rod Stewart, your Bare Naked Ladies, your Police. I mean, they all come here, you know. And Jay-Z was here recently. I mean, and it's just so great because there's only 6,000 seats in the whole arena. So, you know, we all get to be real close up. And but, you know, while he was here, this guy was about to sing for us. He just pops into the local yoga studio, a friend of mine's, three different times. And just hangs out with everyone and just a really down-to-earth, very, very great guy. I like our guest coming on. So let's have a little listen to Sting and the Police. So funny, the you know, the music, this sort of timelessness of this. I just remember when I first started work, I was 15, and I worked in a reproduction picture framers and an antique restorers, and it was like a throwback of Dickens. It was just this real, you know, real rundown place. But we used to make and frame some original pieces like Renoirs and Picassos and Degas, and it was just a great introduction to art. I think it's probably why I like art so much. But this was playing. I remember standing. It just brings me back to standing at that, you know, desk in a throwback from Dickens, and working my time away building these frames. And one of the frames I built actually at that time was interesting. I built a frame. I built two famous frames, one for Prince Charles and Lady Diana's wedding, and I built one for the 80th birthday of the Queen Mother. And a painting was commissioned, the Elizabeth Rose. And I built the frame for it. Imagine that. My little claim for fame. Oh! Aren't I special? Anyway, let's get to the guest. I'm rambling on here, but I'm really excited. I'm really glad to have you on the show. As ever, start with a little gratitude. This guest, you're going to hear a great story here. I mean, this guy got a call that I think any one of us, if we got that call, would be honored, very honored to have. And I can see why. This guy is no BS, straight in your face. And knows his stuff, you know. He's not out to prove anything to any of us, you know, but he's very, very good at what he does. And I'm very, very glad that he decided to come spend some time with me. And so let's sit back, relax, and enjoy the wonderful Greg Reed. So here I am looking for that word, and here it is, excitement. I'm so excited. And my guest today I don't even know where to start. I mean, the resume is so long, but it's a resume of results and accomplishment and action. He's known as a phenom in the area of action. So, Greg, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot, brother. Been looking forward to this.
Well, yeah, me too, you know, and like I said, it's hard to know where to start, but I suppose really what I want to start is the fact that you really are able to sort of decode the mystery of success and really sort of talk to the heart of people who are starting out. So how did you get to that place? How did you get to a place where you were able to demystify this whole thing and really help people move, it doesn't matter where they're starting, but really move in the right direction?
Well, probably because I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, Dave. I'm just a regular guy. And I went to find the simplification of that word success and say, hey, look, if you broke it down into the most simple forms, how would you explain things? So, for example, in 3 minutes, I could explain how the wealthiest people get to be rich. You want to hear it?
Let's do it.
All right. So for the sake of argument, let's say everyone listening here, we're going to give you $1,000 cash. Everyone's got $1,000. And for the sake of argument, let's just say that everyone wants a brand new sofa for their living room. Well, what's 90% of the people going to do? And most people will say, go buy a sofa. And that's true. But the challenge is they'll buy a sofa for $1,500 and go $500 in debt. That's what 90% of Americans do. The top 9% will buy a sofa with that $1,000 and live debt-free. But the millionaires do something different. You know, for myself, I like bubblegum. So I'm going to go buy a big red bubblegum machine, the ones you see at the mall. They cost $750 cash, and I'll take the other $250 and buy bubblegum in bulk at a penny each and fill that machine. I'll take the machine, put it in the mall. Kids will come by and put in a quarter for every bubblegum that only cost me a penny. They'll trade me a quarter for a penny, quarter for a penny, and before you know it, in no time, I'll make well over $1,000 in pure profit, go buy that sofa, be debt-free. But I also understand that I've got a machine that continues to make me money month after month after month. And that's what the wealthiest people do. They break it down and find their own version of what a bubblegum machine means to them.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, and by the way, that was like a minute. So let's look at this. You know, why do you think it is that this simple philosophy that you were able to explain in less than a minute, that every single person listening, I mean, we're in 171 countries. It doesn't matter what country they're listening to, you know, they get this picture, right? Why is this not taught to people when they're going through school? Why do you think that is?
I wish we had the answer. The good news is, again, I happen to be in America. I'm in San Diego, California. And my co-author with Think and Grow Rich, 3 Feet from Gold book, Sharon Lecter, just got some legislation passed in Arizona where from now on, they will be teaching a lot of financial literacy and situations like such as this and simplifications in public schools in her state. And we're hoping that it goes nationwide and worldwide. But the answer is I don't have the answer because it defies logic. And the whole thing is everything can be really simplified. I've talked to the most successful people on this planet and they all keep telling me the same answers. And I realized that when broken down to the simplest forms, not only can we understand it, but we could actually apply it. And most people don't take action towards success because they think it's so complicated. But when you make it so easy, then, geez, just like you and me, it can go, hey, I can go make a bubblegum machine, whatever that looks like. And understand this. I write books. Here's my bubblegum machine. I write one book. I get it published. And then guess what? I get paid royalties on that year after year after year after year for the rest of my life. There's a bubblegum machine. After 46 books, that's like having 46 bubblegum machines all over the place.
Well, books and movies, because you get the same with your movies as well. I know you're a great filmmaker. I want to get there, but I want to sort of go back and sort of look at this. You said you'd interviewed all these people, and I know that's been a wonderful part of your journey is interviewing some of the greatest minds on the planet. Can you share a few of those highlights, a few of the people that you met that were really stick out for you?
Yeah, well, the first interview I did was something that I did not see coming at all. I mean, it was interesting. It's one of the boxing legend named Evander Holyfield, who won more heavyweight championships than anyone in history. And I went to him, I says, Evander, what makes you so special? And he said to me, I just have a higher standard. That's it. I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, if you have a car and you won't tolerate it running bad or being dirty, you have a higher standard and a nicer car than your next door neighbor. In sports, I showed up early, left late, invented exercises, had a higher standard, and I won more championships. He goes, where could you be outside the ring if you had a higher standard than your competition? I said, but didn't it hurt being in a fight? He goes, God, yeah, it does. He goes, but when you're in a fight, you don't focus on the pain. You don't focus on the punches. As soon as you focus on the blows, you end up on your back knocked out. But that's what people do outside the ring. They focus on gas prices and war, economy, and they wonder why they never become a champion. And he pulled me in really tight and he says, you know what the funny thing is? When you do win the championship, everyone comes to their feet and they chant your name. They raise your hand in victory and a guy puts a shiny belt around your waist. And at that moment, you don't feel even one of the punches you took along the journey. But the guy in the losing locker room will feel every bruise for the rest of their life, wishing they had a higher standard. So the moral is, where is our standards right now? And where could it be if we had the courage and the fortitude to raise them just a bit?
Yeah. And what a great story. So there's one highlight. Can you talk about somebody else that you've interviewed with again, you know, that you really inspired you or came up with a philosophy like that?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've had an opportunity for people that don't know who I am, which is pretty much everyone listening into this thing. In 1908, Napoleon Hill was gifted a letter by Andrew Carnegie to go write the Bible of Personal Development, Think and Grow Rich. 100 years later, the Napoleon Hill Foundation wrote a very similar letter and gifted it to me. So they gave me the opportunity, kind of like the golden ticket, so to speak, to go around the world and meet today's top thought leaders. So just this last month, I've had the opportunity to sit down with everyone from the founder of TED Talks to the guy who started JetBlue and Azul Airlines. I get to sit down with some of the most incredible people and pick their brains to find their philosophy towards success. But recently, I've got a book coming out called Stickability. And the very first interview I did was a guy named Marty Cooper. I saw him on TV on 60 Minutes, and he's being interviewed, and I said, I got to meet this guy. And for those of you who don't know who he is, which is everybody, again, listening in, you know what he invented. It's called the cellular phone. So I got to sit down with the guy who actually invented the cellular phone and changed our world. And I said, what does stickability mean to you? And Marty says that stickability has to be parallel with another word called flexibility. Says, if you're not willing to be adaptable and adjust to any situation, you'll end up being stuck. And then he told a story about the spider monkey. Dave, have you ever heard that one before?
No.
Well, the spider monkey in the rainforest is the most quick, nimble creature there is. You can't harpoon it. You can't spear it. You can't net it. It's just too quick. So one hunter came up with a solution. He took a giant, heavy log and drilled a tiny hole inside and left the log at the base of the jungle. He dropped a peanut inside that little hole and walked away. The monkey would smell that nut from the treetop and come down to the perch and reach her hand inside that little hole and grab a hold of that nut. But as soon as their fist wrapped around, it became so big, he couldn't pull it back out and become anchored to that log. Now, an hour later, the hunter would come by and hit him over the head and capture the elusive spider monkey. Now, all he's got to do is let go of that nut, pull his hand out, and live to fight another day. But the nut, you know, he thinks that's saving him. That's nutrition. He's got to have it. And the moral of that message is, right now, are we holding on to our own nut? But it's in the shape of a job or a car or a bad relationship or a house or an opportunity. And the realities are sometimes we need to have the courage to let go, to pull our hand out, so we don't end up just being stuck.
Mm. You know, I want to go back because I was just thinking, you know, here you are. You've won the Willy Wonka ticket of personal growth. And truly, for those people that don't understand what that meant with, as far as Napoleon Hill, I mean, this is a massive, massive, massive honor. And like you said, 100 years later, you get to have this introduction to some of the greatest minds on the planet. But let's go back into your story a little bit. And tell me, you know, what's your story been like to get to the point before you win the winning lottery ticket? How did you start applying all these things in your own life? What's your personal story?
Well, the personal story is really simple. I grew up in the mean streets of a place called San Diego, California, right along the ocean, and had a really good life, to be quite honest with you. I don't have the rags to riches type of deal that most people have. I've lived a very fortunate upbringing. And I owned an advertising corporation right here in my hometown. And one day, a local college university at UCSD asked me to come in and do a presentation. And after the presentation, they said, hey, you should go speak at the other colleges. And they started passing me around. After one of these events, someone comes up to me and says, you should write a book. And I thought to myself, you know, that's a good goal because I never really read a book before. And so my mentor had gave me a great lesson. He said, go to Barnes & Noble, go to the bookstore, buy all the number one bestsellers, read them and see if you could do it too. Well, I did, and I reached out to all those authors and said, will you teach me? And they said, yes. And then I said, well, if I want to become a public speaker, who's the best in the world? And I said, Zig Ziglar, Brian Tracy, Dennis Waitley, Charlie Tremendous Jones, Les Brown. I went right to them and said, will you teach me? And they did. And I realized right then and there that the most successful people are also the most available people. I'm going to say it again. The most successful people are also the most available people. If you're brand new at something, you're pretty cool. You're happy-go-lucky. You got nothing to prove. If you're at the pinnacle, the top of your field, you're happy-go-lucky. You got nothing to prove there either. If you're in the middle, pain in the neck because you're filled with ego. You're edging God out. You're finding your own voice. And I realized for myself, if I wanted to make the biggest impact, I'm just going to cut to the front of the line and find the world top thought leaders and align with them. And here we are today.
That's interesting. That's really interesting because I had a similar thing happen with me where, again, it was really there was no one at the front of the line when I wanted to learn this craft. But, you know, so here you are. You find this this amazing shortcut, which obviously is there for everyone. And I mean, I have it all the time. And you must get this, Greg, where people call you and they almost sound apologetic for calling. It's like, you know, I know you're busy. That's the first line out of their mouth. And, you know, it's almost like they're trying to get off the call even when they're asking for help. But let me sort of go through this then. So you find this kind of formula of getting to the best people and learning from them, asking for help, learning from them. What are some of the things that you've learned that you've applied then and that you're teaching right now? Some of those core fundamentals. I know that one of the things you teach, which I teach all the time, is, you know, you become the sum of the five people that you spend the most time with. Do you think that environment piece is one of the big pieces?
I think it's the single most important piece, actually, that, you know, we truly are a reflection of the five people we hang around the most, and our attitude, income, and lifestyle is the average of that group. If you change that association, your life changes accordingly. In high school, if you hung around the smoking section, you're a smoker. If you hung around the jocks, you're a jock. If you hang around people that complain, gripe, moan, then that's your dialogue. If you hang around people that are uplifting, upbeat, and look for the solution in life, then that becomes a dialogue. So I believe by surrounding myself with people who are getting the results I want, that is the key element. It's not just the core people that you hang out with, but who are you hanging out with the people that are getting the results you want? A couple of years ago, I do crazy adventures. I like doing crazy things. I was just whitewater rafting 2 days ago and you know, jumping out of airplanes and all this crazy stuff. But one of the things is a couple of years ago, I went to Africa and climbed and summited Mount Kilimanjaro. And people go, well, how did you do that going from, you know, sea level in La Jolla? And the answer is simple. I found the Sherpa, the porters that have climbed it 300, 400, 500 times, and that's who I hired because I knew that they'd make it to the top of the mountain. I didn't recreate the wheel. So every time they put their boot print, I put my boot print in their same exact spot because I knew they'd make it to the top. I didn't try to go on my own path. And I realized the same thing applies to everything we want in life. If we can surround ourselves with people that are doing what we want to do, eventually some of that through osmosis will rub off, and then we could do it too.
It's amazing, though, isn't it? Because that sort of spider monkey analogy comes in when you look at Kilimanjaro and you look at the people that really don't do well, that have to turn back or who end up perishing on that mountain because about 19 people a year do. We find that ego again plays the role. It's that sometimes that young, strong, fit bull that wants to show everyone that he knows best. And we see that a lot there. I know we summited in February and somebody passed away in front of us in a group in front of us, same thing. But it again came down to that ego piece. But when we think about this spider monkey holding on to this nut and we think about environment, how many people do you think sort of think themselves out of changing this group they're hanging out with? They're sort of hanging on to these friends they've had and not realizing the detriment to themselves and really letting go of that nut and saying, hey, listen, I'm going to clean house a little bit here. And sometimes it's family as well. What do you say to someone who's, you know, the most negative people in their life or the people that really are the sort of the negative influence on their life are people who are the closest to them. What's your advice to them?
Well, first of all, we are exactly where we choose to be. You know, that's my philosophy. So the realities are, if we don't like a situation we're at, well, we've got the opportunity to change that. Now, it doesn't mean that you can change your family, but it does mean that we don't have to share our experience, our dreams, our hopes, and goals with those people that we know are going to be negative naysayers. You know, one of my favorite interviews I did with that is a gal named Debbie Fields, who opened up a company called Mrs. Fields Cookies. And I asked her, I said, tell me your story. And she goes, well, at age 14, she was sitting at the dinner table and her mom says, you have to eat all the food or you can't leave. But the mom's cooking wasn't very good. An hour goes by and the mom says, are you going to eat that food? And Debbie says, nope. 2 hours goes by. You can eat that food? Nope. Midnight rolls around. You can eat that food, Debbie? She says, nope. The mom says, fine. I'll never cook for you again a day in your life. And Debbie Fields said, excellent, because she didn't want the food in the first place. The next day, she takes all of her babysitting money, goes to the store, buys ingredients, and starts cooking and whips up a batch of cookies. At age 19, opens up her first franchise of Mrs. Fields Cookies, and later on in life sells for like $500 million. And I said, basically, your mom's a role model for you. She's your inspiration. And she said, yes. At age 19, when she opened up her first franchise, her mom told her not to do it. She's a loser. She's a failure. She's a woman. And she's just going to look like an idiot. And then Debbie said something brilliant. She goes, Greg, to one side of this world, we have something called a cheering section. These are the people that are going to root us on and encourage us, but they're few and far between. To the other side, we have something called the jeering section. They boo, rain on our parade, and tell us every reason we'll fail. Debbie says it's up to us as a grown adult to stand in between those two groups and decide for ourselves which one we listen to.
Mm, awesome. And so, Greg, so if we look at the environment piece then, and we look at that the cheering and jeering section, we look at the choice that we make, and we know that we become the sum of the five people we spend the most time with. If we say that one, okay, people get that. What's another step that you found fundamental in this journey of success?
You know, one of the greatest ones that was interesting was not over planning. And again, this comes with a story. And for people that aren't used to my stories, I'm going to be a great old man, I guess, sitting on that porch telling these things. Yet they're because, you know, I've got my own philosophies, but the philosophies that I came into this with were adjusted and adapted by the great people I met. So forgive me, but I'm going to answer that with telling you a story that I learned that changed everything for my life.
And I love it. I got my rocking chair out. I'm just sitting here and I'm just listening.
So there's a gentleman named Truett Cathy who started a company called Chick-fil-A Restaurants in America. He's a billionaire guy. And I says, Truett, what's the secret of your success? Why have you done so well? And what could I do differently? And he looks at me and he says, stop over planning. And I go, what do you mean? I go, that goes against everything I've ever taught and everything I've ever learned. And he goes, last year you had a lot of plans. And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, how did that work out for you? I go, not very good. And he goes, 5 years ago you had a master plan. I guarantee that didn't go as you expected. He goes, you might have hit a goal from time to time because that's what people do, but how it went down didn't go as you thought. So the secret is to look for unexpected opportunities. I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, let's say I want to get to the end of the street. That's my goal. I have to have the courage to get off my butt and start moving towards that direction. But where a planner is going to plan every step or they're going to pause and take a break, I'm going to look for opportunity. Like, did a kid leave a skateboard or a bicycle out to make my journey shorter? He goes, if I get real lucky, I'll wave down a neighbor and I'll hitch a ride to the end of the street. He goes, either way, I'm fixated and I will hit my goal. I'm just not so caught up on exactly of how it has to happen.
Hmm. And so, Greg, you know, when I'm listening to your voice, there's this immense confidence that you exude, which I know a lot of people don't have. And I'm, you know, you talked about having this, you know, a great life and, you know, not that rags to riches sort of story that you hear so often about, but there's this real kind of real straight to it kind of wisdom that you have. It's kind of cutting through all the crap. You kind of just like lay it right down. It's pretty simple. It's boom, 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 this ABC. Do you find then, you know, when people are listening to this right now, what's happening? Let's talk about the people out there, 171 countries, people listening. What are some of the people going to do with this? And what are some of the people not going to do with this? What's the difference in the results in people's lives listening right now?
Well, again, it's the action behind the attraction that makes your dream come true. You got to think it, you got to feel it, and you got to get off your backside and you got to do it. And the only thing that's missing is the actionable step, because you say, well, what's the difference between people who do it and don't do it? They took action and did it. That's it. And I am a realist. Look, I'm not a PD, personal development guru, boom shakalaka, crystal bowls, firewalking guy. It's not who I am. I'm just, look, we're, if you don't like where you're at, do something about it, take actions, you know where you need to be and go. And so I realized, instead of complaining, griping and moaning, it's all of the people that I interview, the people who I hang out with, that's what we talk about. We talk about what actions we can take to have a different life, not dreaming about what it would look like. We sit there and say, look, here's a goal. Now, how can we make it happen? And that's why we hit most of our goals. And the reality is, when people come to my events, they love it because they leave with actionable steps and real life kick in the pants, I guess, so to speak. You know, one of the funny things I love about these infomercials, the late night infomercials, is the first thing they teach you is how easy that thing you bought will fold up and go tidily underneath your bed. And the reason is because that's where it's going to go, right? And so, I mean, for myself, I'm like going, how can you teach people stuff real life that you go, yeah, I get that. I can see it. And now I can go do it if they choose to do it. But you know what? It's not my responsibility to get people to move and take action. I don't think, you know, I am here to fix anybody. My goal is just to share the information, the same stuff I've applied. And then if it works for you, cool. If I can help, cool. But it's not my responsibility to be a codependent and try to fix every person in this industry.
Sure. Sure. I love it. I love that. I'm going to steal that one if I may. But so, okay. So, you know, you talk about these actionable steps and I want to get to your book in a moment as well. I know you got a new book coming out and I want to talk about both actually, yeah, I mean, 45 books. Hello. But talk to me a little bit about some other steps that you know are fundamental. Someone listening right now, maybe they're in a country where they don't have exact access, right? But what's something they could be doing today, tomorrow, this week, that's really going to make the difference for themselves?
Well, the first thing I would do is exactly find out who's doing what you would want to do. So, for example, if I was in Ethiopia and I wanted to become an artist, well, I would say, okay, well, who's the successful artist? Who's the people that are getting the results I want? Who's getting their art shown and people like? And then I would seek those people out. And then I would ask them for guidance and mentorship, or just simply watch and observe what they're doing and start applying those same things for myself. That's the bottom line. Look, when I was a sales guy, you know, I walk into a company to work and I'd say, okay, who's driving the Ferrari out there? Whose name's on the top of the board? How do I get my desk right next to that person? Because I know that I could just watch the successful actions of other people. And it comes down to that simple, basic thing. But in our reality, that's all it comes down to. So the actionable steps to me is the key to everything.
So again, what you've done, which I love, is that, I mean, the three or four things we've spoken about are absolutely doable. Very, very easy to understand and very, very easy to apply. When we talk about modeling, so someone's out there as the best artist in Ethiopia or someone close to you who's really, really good, you find out what they're doing, you copy it, and then you add your own spin, right?
That's it. And you know, it's interesting. When it's all said and done, we use this word and throw it around success a lot. And I want to be very clear. Success to me is not deemed by money on any level whatsoever. Now, I choose to like prosperity, but I don't consider that successful. So I think that there's firemen and nurses and doctors and military people that, you know, might not have the greatest financial reward, but they're very successful because they're living a purpose-filled life. And that, to me, is the definition of success. So after interviewing all these people, I wanted to know, is there a, you know, a blueprint, an equation for people that have success in their own life to find their purpose? Because people say, go find your purpose, but no one tells you how. And if you like, and again, in just 3 minutes, I'll teach people how I did it and maybe they could do it too.
Let's do it.
All right. It comes down to this. It's called the success equation. And for people studying along at home, it's the letter P plus T times A squared plus F equals success. I'll say it again. P plus T times A squared plus F equals success. And it sounds like a fancy math test, but it's really easy. You see, these late night infomercial guys, you know, the big guy with the, you know, big teeth on TV will tell you to go find your passion, right? He goes, go find your passion and the money will follow. And I'm here to say that I think that's a complete and utter lie, because the realities are I watch these late night talent shows too. I'm a real addicted to these like American Idols and things of that nature. And I see these singing competitions and these kids show up in hundreds of thousands and they're all passionate, but majority of them are lacking something called talent. So if you're passionate about singing, but you have no talent, will you really be successful? And the answer is no. But if you're passionate and you're talented, you've got a shot. But without the first A, you'll never make it. And that is action, the same word we've been talking over and over. So if you're passionate about singing and you had a God-given gift, but you did nothing with that gift, are you truly going to be successful? And the answer is no. But without the second A, you can just kiss it goodbye. And that is association. So if you are talented and you're passionate, you are willing to take action and pay your dues, and you associated, aligned with someone in the music industry who could open the doors for you and had the faith, F, that that's your journey, well, now you've got a success equation. And I realized that the most successful people on the planet, again, not deemed by money, followed that exact equation, whether they knew it or not.
So let's talk about the talent part. By the way, love the equation, but the talent part, is talent something that you feel you're born with, or someone out there, they have the passion for something, like they're singing, can they become more talented? Is something where they can put their focus, or if that talent isn't there, do they go and find something they're more suited for? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, again, it depends, and people are always so caught up in being the star. So let me go back and be very clear. Let's just say I was a janitor. Okay. And I was a really good janitor and I was passionate about it. And all of a sudden I realized that my passion was professional basketball. I loved it. I go to, you know, I watch all the games. I have all the jerseys. I'm just fixated on basketball. Well, here's the thing. My passion was basketball, but my talent, my gift was janitorial, how could I take action with the right association? And you go back and say, imagine getting a job at the Staples Center for the Lakers, and your job was every day to wake up and go down to that environment, hang out with all the celebrities and all the different sport people that you idolize. You apply your talents and gifts, and you had the faith that you're giving back to humanity, to society. Would that not be a successful life? Sure would. So you don't always have to be the rock star. There's just many different ways to apply that equation.
You know, that's a brilliant, brilliant analogy. I got goosebumps as I heard that. You know, Oprah Winfrey talked about that on her last show. She talked about everyone's passion or purpose. And she talked about, you know, baking pies or popping zits. You know, she really it came down to that thing that you most love. And really beautiful, beautiful analogy. So we've got this success formula. We've got this idea of understanding now about modeling. We understand about, you know, our environment. Is there anything else that I want to get to your book, but is there anything else that you say is Dave, I want to make sure people understand this other piece. Is there a piece we're missing here?
Well, I think we're summarizing. Where are you leading at, Dave?
Well, no, I was just thinking more about this whole, to me personally, I was going to ask you more about self-worth, is that this whole piece of people's, how they feel about themselves. I remember you did this piece on stage with the $100 bill. You know, and do you want to tell that story a little bit and then talk about, you know, how does someone start to get that?
I get it.
Yeah, you get it?
I get it. And by the way, people listening into, here's what in radio and TV world, this is called a setup. So he just basically put a ball on a tee and expected me to hit a home run and I didn't catch it. So thanks for that one, by the way, Dave. So it's funny because in this world, you know, when I started going on this journey, people don't know this, but Napoleon Hill was never paid a penny to write Think and Grow Rich. And when the Napoleon Hill Foundation gave me this opportunity, they thought it'd be very appropriate to pay me that same wage. So I got nothing. And I sold my house, my cars. I for 3 years, I kind of went all in and found a way to get scrappy to make it happen. But I was feeling down on myself. And I met with the gal who started Pink Magazine. And I said, I feel like such a failure, a loser. I used to be kind of successful. I got nothing. And she said, never let your mistakes, setbacks, or circumstances determine your value as a person. And she reached in her purse and she pulled out a $100 bill and she goes, do you want this? And I said, yeah. I go, I really could use $100. And she crumples it and looks at me and goes, here, do you still want that? And I said, yeah. She throws it on the ground and steps on it like a cigar butt. She goes, here, do you still want that piece of paper? And I said, I really do. And she goes, why? And I said, it's $100 and I could humbly use that money. And she looked at me dead in the eye. She goes, then why is it in life when we get kicked around and bounced? She goes, why is it when we get crumpled, when we get thrown to the ground, when we get stepped on, we think our value changes as a person? Just as that $100 bill's value didn't change, what you've just gone through just makes you stronger, a part of the journey called life.
And so this self-worth piece, do you have any thoughts around? Because this is the thing I see. I've trained a few hundred thousand students, and it always seems to come down at the end of the day, this kind of inner conversation that when we look in the mirror, that conversation with self. Do you have any thoughts around how does someone shortcut or demystify the self-worth equation?
Well, you know what? Again, it's the people that we're hanging out with. I mean, if we hang around people that are positive and uplifting, well, eventually those type of things rub off on us. So when I'm down, I don't go hang out with down people. I want to hang out with people that are even more positive than me, which is sometimes hard to find. And the whole idea is that you got to understand this. When it comes down to self-worth and whatever, it comes down to conditioning, in my opinion, so, or in my counsel at least. So the whole concept is this. It's like if I was going to go run a marathon today, I'd probably die because I have no conditioning. Well, it's the same thing. What if we could start conditioning ourselves for a better attitude, for a better disposition, about a little bit of self-worth? And that means maybe just getting a nicer shirt and going out and people complimenting you. Maybe it's the smallest little things, but the realities are it is a training message. You know, I believe in training for everything we do in life, even when it comes down to financial success or whatever. Did I ever tell you the story about the coin is king jar?
No.
Well, it's so funny. My wife and I, we were living in this nice little condo here. We wanted to move into a bigger house, and we didn't know how to get started. So we bought this jar, and we put a photograph of a two-story house, three-car garage, and ocean view and all this stuff on there. And we started small. Every time we came home from the day, we'd reach into our pocket and purse and pull out all of our loose change, and we'd throw it into that jar and feed the dream. And then what happens is I go to the grocery store and I give my frequent shopper card, and they say, hey, you saved $2 today. I intended to spend that, so I throw it into the jar. If I go out to lunch and Dave says, hey, let me pick up lunch, I says, God bless you. I was going to buy it. How much was the tab? And you say, $42. It goes into the jar because I was going to spend it anyway. Before you knew it, I had over $18,000 saved up in that jar, and that started a mission because I realized, man, if I got that much, what other places could I start saving? And we became a mission. We started using little baby steps, and before you knew it, we had plenty of money to start living the life, the dream that we always hoped. Mm.
And so when you look at your life, I mean, by the way, again, I love this, there's this edgy straightforwardness that you have, which it's so refreshing. But when you look at your life, what are you most proud of so far? Of the things that have happened, the things you've done, when you look back, what sticks out for you?
Well, I mean, go down to three and I'll put them in order. One would be is that I became sober. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't use drugs. I'm 25 years clean and sober guy, which I don't go around talking about too much because, you know, no one really asked, but you just did. So that's my probably biggest accomplishment. Door number two, the thing I'm proud of is my wife. I've got an amazing woman who supports, loves, and encourages me along my journey. And then three is our new child that came into existence about a year and a half ago, Colt, and he's just been an inspiration for me. I finally understood the true definition of unconditional love. Mm. And then, by the way, the people that work in my office, Hilliard and Lane, they're pretty cool guys too.
Wow.
And I can say that because they're staring at me going, why aren't you talking about me?
So, yeah. Yeah, I love you too, Colt. There you go. So that's awesome. And you know, again, when you talk to great people about that question, how often it comes down to that, you know, the love of our life and you know, that, like you talked about, the unconditional part with your son, Colt. So then let's talk about the book, because I'm excited about this. You've got a new book coming out. I know that you mentioned just before we went live on the show that you have a little gift some people who are listening in, and I want to thank you for that in advance. But let's talk about the book. Tell me what's coming up for you.
Yeah, we've got a release in October called Think and Grow Rich, Stickability. It's all about the power of perseverance. And I got to tell you, I'm so excited about it. Believe it or not, the New York Times has never honored Think and Grow Rich brand with a New York Times bestseller status. That's because the original book came out 5 years before they started keeping track. So this book will be the very first one in history that hits New York Times. And we're beyond out of our skin excited about it because it's going to bring these great philosophies and teachings to a worldwide audience in a very large way. And in October 21st and 22nd, we're having a release event right here in San Diego, California, where we're bringing in the founder of the Make-A-Wish Foundation. We're bringing in the guy who invented the credit card magnetic strip and changed all of banking as we know it. We're bringing in the movie producer for Pretty Woman and Mothman Prophecies. We're bringing in the publisher of The Secret. We're bringing in some of the world top thought leaders all in one place, all at one time to share this release because we think it's going to be the biggest thing since sliced bread. And here's the best thing. I made a documentary of the entire process of meeting all these incredible people, and we're going to have a red carpet worldwide release event at the movie theater the first night of our gathering, and the people that respond to me and say they want to come, you can come. Tickets are super inexpensive, like $199 for general admission and $695 for VIP, and you get all kinds of great stuff, like the leather edition of Think and Grow Rich and all this amazing stuff. The CEO of Napoleon Hill Foundation is coming in. Sharon Lecter from Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and working on these other projects. I mean, it's the who's who gathering. And all you got to do is email my general manager, gm@bookgreg.com. gm@bookgreg.com. His name is Hilliard, and he will get you set up and get you a thing. And here's the best thing. As soon as you sign up to come, I'm going to send everyone a copy of Stickability the day it releases at no charge. So one will be shipped directly from our publisher right to you. I mean, that's about the coolest thing I can do.
Wow. That is awesome. I'm going to be there. I'm coming.
Nice. It's good. The house. Chisel.
So that's incredible. So talk a little bit about though. So you got this movie. I don't want to take too much away then because obviously they're going to be getting the book. They're going to be getting there. They'll be there at the premiere of this movie, and we should talk about that because when you make movies, I mean, you make movies. I mean, you've made three movies. Am I right, or have you made four now?
No, I've created three, and I'm making one right now. It's the actual. I got the rights to do the story of the Make-A-Wish Foundation. The Frank Shankwitz is the founder, and Kitty, their life story, and it's going to come out amazing. It'll be kind of like be a Rudy Rocky type esque film that we're working on, and having our team meeting today at noon, as a matter of fact. But for the Stickability, I got to tell you, it just turned out really cool. It's not a typical talking head type of movie. It's a compilation of like nothing you've ever seen before. But again, I want to be very clear. People that come out and be part of the Stickability release, here's the neatest thing, is that our speakers don't just show up and walk out on stage and leave. They actually are part of the audience. We actually are going to have a chance to mix, mingle, and hang out with these people for two full days. So you're not just taking a photo op opportunity. You can actually go knees to knees and hang out and talk to these people and see what you're working on. And, you know, you got a movie in you. You got a book. You got a New York Times bestseller in you, whatever. There you go. It's only 400 people, by the way. It's a very small thing. We're more than halfway filled up. It's only 2 months out. This thing always sells out every time we do this type of thing. So this is a very intimate group. And I got to tell you that it's an opportunity that most people walk away from because they'll let money, time, excuse stand in their way. And when Napoleon Hill was given the opportunity to write Think and Grow Rich, he was given 60 seconds to make that choice. And when he walked out of the room, there was 31 seconds left on Mr. Carnegie's stopwatch. And the question is, we talked about action, talked about getting off our backside. We talked about moving. Here's an opportunity. gm@bookgreg.com is your opportunity to take action, to do something different, to change that association, to hang out with the people that you aspire, to change the five people you hang around the most, and more importantly, not let any excuse stand in our way. We're here to help, and we'll give it to you straight. Come play.
Awesome. Give us the dates.
It's going to be October 21st, October 22nd, in San Diego, California. Think and grow rich, stickability in beautiful San Diego, California, in a place called La Jolla, which is the la-di-da, whoop-de-whoop, fancy spot of San Diego. So make sure that you bring a little bit of clothes to dress to impress. And you know, it's one of the cool things, Dave, is imagine 400 of us. That's what I'm looking forward to. People like you and me hanging out, shooting the breeze in the back, comparing experience, strength, hope. And hopefully we can pull some mastermind groups out of this thing where we go home and we can stay in touch with one another. And I got to tell you, I appreciate everything you're doing to make this world a better place, because so many people talk about, you know, taking this information to the masses. You're actually doing it. And anything I can do to be of support to you, the answer is yes.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So I want to talk a little bit about this default mode that goes on in people's heads, because here you are. You lay out this most amazing offer, which is like you say, when we talk about the association piece and you know, and this wasn't a setup. This is just the way success works. But the idea that we become the sum of the five people we hang out with, we now have an opportunity to hang out with the who's who. Quite often people's mind goes to that one or two places. I can't afford it. I don't have the time. I can't afford it. I don't have the time. And that's the sort of the echo of their whole life story when an opportunity presents itself. How does someone overcome that conditioning when they hear this and they have that feeling of, oh, I should go, and then their mind talks them out of it? What's a strategy they can use in this second to say, screw it. You know what? I'm doing it. I've done this my whole life. I've listened to this echo in my own head. I can't afford it. I don't have the time. What's something they can do right now to really take action?
Well, to get rid of a bad case of the one size. A bad case of the one size. And that means I'm going to go do this and I'm going to finally get involved once I get the kids out of the house, once I get the opportunity. The best time to take action is the moment you feel it in your heart. And the realities are this: if it's not your right time, you don't want to come, don't come, because the reality is we want cool people like Dave, us. We want the action takers there. So if you're sitting on the fence right now, just do it. If you're thinking, hey, this isn't the right time, then don't come. But the realities are, come play with the people that want to play with you. Because again, we don't want him and Han. We're going to teach real life practical stuff. Look, you got some of the top business iconic figures in the world coming to this guy. I mean, the top people in literally the Hall of Fame are coming in to teach and share information with us. So we want to make sure that we honor them by bringing the right people there in the first place. So you're that person, come play. If it's not right timing, we understand that too. I mean, I can't be any clearer than that.
Awesome. And you know, we're getting close to the end of the show. Before I ask you my final question, I often wonder, with someone like yourself who has, again, this real, this refreshing, let's call it refreshing, no BS, refreshing, in your face, but truly applicable information that really can transform anyone who's listening right now. They take even what you've just said on the show. But let me ask you, is there anything that you kind of wish I'd asked you that I haven't? Is there a question that's lingering out there, or something, one last thing you'd like to share with everyone?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. And I don't know why this popped in my head, but this is one of my cool, again, so it's just a story, but it's true fact, and it just happened recently. And it's about seizing opportunity. And what happened is that a gentleman I met a few years ago is a Hispanic motivational speaker, really cool guy. And he kept staying in touch every month, saying, hey, do you got any opportunities for me? And I kept saying, no, not in Spanish. Sorry, I'm just American, but if something pops up, I'll let you know. Every month he'd check in, hey, you got any opportunities? Nothing came. Finally, the Napoleon Hill Foundation, they call me up, the lawyers and the CEO, and they say, hey, we've got an opportunity for someone to read Think and Grow Rich, the special collector's edition in Spanish for a whole market and become the voice and face of it. Do you know anyone? I go, do I ever? So I get off the phone, and I call this gentleman up, say, hey, man, do I got an opportunity? You get to read Think and Grow Rich in Spanish. And he goes, how much do I get paid? And I says, I don't know, but I'm sure you get something. He goes, well, I can't do it because it's going to take too much time. I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, I got to focus on my own business right now. I can't be diddling dandle. I go, what you asked me? I go, okay, thanks for your time. And I hung up. Immediately, I picked up my friend, Ruben Gonzalez, who's the only person who's ever competed in 4 Winter Olympics in 4 different decades, breaking the Guinness Book of World Records for Argentina. I pick up the phone and say, Ruben, I got an opportunity for you. And he says, where do you want me to fly? I go, nowhere, but don't you want me to tell you what it is? He goes, no, if you're calling me, it must be good. I go, I want you to read Think and Grow Rich in Spanish and become the voice. And he goes, how much do I have to pay to do that? I said, nothing. I go, they're going to pay you. And he goes, here's the other question I got. When can I get started? Not only did he jump on it, whooped it out in 4 days, but now he is the voice of Think and Grow Rich for the Special Collector's Edition in Spanish. The point is, so many people get gifted opportunities, but very few have the courage and the fortitude to take action.
Awesome. With that being said, we're at the top of the show. I want to ask you my final question. The show's called The Kick-Ass Life. For you, Greg, what does it mean to have a kick-ass life?
You're cutting out on me, Dave.
I said the show's called The Kick-Ass Life. What does it mean to you to live a kick-ass life?
Yes. One word, freedom. That's it. Kick-ass life is having freedom. The freedom to go where you want, do what you want, live the life you want, hang out with the people you want, and live the life that you've destined for yourself. So for myself, I've worked so hard to have that one word, freedom. And yes, it comes with challenges. Yes, it comes with, you know, ups and downs. But the realities are, it's the greatest life in the world because you can truly be yourself when you have the freedom, the opportunity to do just that. So the kick-ass life to me is living the dream that you've, you know, most people only, you know, have in their heads, but actually going out and stepping into it, embracing it, and have the freedom and the courage and the fortitude to be yourself. Because guess what? Everyone else is taken.
Well, I want to thank you and your two guys behind you. I'm waving at them. And I especially want to send one of the highlights of the show where you talked about cult and this unconditional love and the support of your wife. So I want to send love to your family as well. And thank you so much. I look forward to playing in the future. I know that we're going to cross paths and have some fun together.
Absolutely. And people listening here, I know we're ending up, and I'm just going to end with this. Here's my burning desire. You know, I don't know you listening in, but I do know this about you. The only reason you're listening into this because you're ready for more out of life. Whether you come play with us or someone else, that's your choice. But here's the bottom line. It's time to draw an imaginary line in the sand and say, it's my turn. For years, you've been taking care of your family, your friends, your coworkers, your peers. But guess what? It's your turn. Draw that line in the sand and say, you know what? I'm going to fill my own cup so full that I'll feed the world with what flows over. It's my turn to start experiencing, learning, and taking the first step to creating a life of sustained abundance that other people around me have always had. It's my turn to start having the life. It's my turn to embrace. I got a story, a book, a movie, an invention, a business. You got something inside of you that's so special that the world's waiting to see. Just like Les Brown says, you got greatness inside of you, and it's time to let that beast run free. You got something special inside of you. It's time to draw that line in the sand and say, it's my turn. And if there's anything I can do to be of service along that journey and add contribution, you just reach out. And again, just like David, the answer will be yes.
All right. Thank you, Greg. GM at bookgreg.com. GM at bookgreg.com. Greg, we'll see you on the other side. Well, I'm sure you enjoyed it as much as I did, you know, and it really, I love the bubblegum scenario, and I've already actually shared it with someone who, because I mean, there's lots of different ways to talk about wealth, and I love teaching people how to think differently about money. And, you know, obviously making money is one thing, having money work for you is another, but creating wealth, being happy and wealthy is altogether different, you know. So, oh, my phone just beeped. And so, you know, it's great. There's so many nuggets there, so many gems that that he shared. And again, what a great call. But before I talk about it a little bit more, I just want to play you a song. This is a great, again, you know it is. So here we go. I'm glad you enjoyed the show. You know, track him down there. Get to that event. I actually just realized that I can't make it. You know, I'm going to be in Australia. Small excuse, I know. but I'm actually training in Australia that week. And so I can't, even though I said I would, I can't. I don't want to let you down and you come there and I'm not there. But I would recommend going. I think it's one of those good, great occasions to rub shoulder. Remember what he said, you know, you become the sum of the five people you spend the most time with. And I truly, truly, truly believe that. And that's been one of the big changes in my life is the people that I attract into my life and some goodies. And remember, you know, your dreams can come true if you have the courage to pursue them. So don't get stopped by that monkey mind, that little brain that will talk you out of everything great. All right. And remember, the great way to predict the future is to invent it. So go out there, invent your future, have a kick-ass life. And again, welcome to the new office. And I hope you'll get here one day and hang out. It's a beautiful part of the world. And so I will definitely see you.
That was kick-ass.